What is this? What is this?
This is the Encode.
Sweet.
This episode is brought to you by Avo Creative, a creative company that builds brands and people. To learn more, visit the link in the description of this episode. In case you missed it, this is the second part of a two-part episode. Be sure to listen to part one first so you don't miss out on some much-needed context. Ladies, gents, and everyone in between, welcome to The Young God, a podcast for gods. I'm your host, Rodney Omorgaje, and this is the epic conclusion to my conversation with rapper, author, and podcaster Zubi Udezue, aka Zubi Music. This second part with Zubi is where the M-Switch Media team left the room. No cameras rolling, just me and Zubi. And this gave me an opportunity to really let loose. I went ham on my unpopular opinions about God, leadership, celebrity worship, R. Kelly, reincarnation, and other thought experiments. And trust Zubi, he's got thick skin and an elastic heart. He was such a good sport. He went wherever I wanted to go, and dare I say, we put on a damn good show. Both of us told the truth as we saw it. It was authentic. It was real. And I'm pretty sure that the smart ones, the intelligent ones among you guys, will listen between the lines, pick what is useful, what is impactful, and what is truthful. And most importantly, I hope to God you have just as much fun listening as we had recording. Because part two begins where we left off in part one, where I asked him the trickiest of trick questions. Listen. If you saving the world meant you would have to torture a child to do so, would you take that chance?
What? What is that question? Oh boy. What? Wait, what do we even mean by saving the world?
Everything that it would take to make world peace, world hunger.
I'm sorry, kid.
Out the way.
Sorry, kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've asked those questions and very rarely the last one about the torturing the child. Mm-hmm. You're the only one who's ever said, sorry, child. Because I will torture the child too.
Well, that's why I had to clarify when you said like, world, like, what did you say? World peace or well, you know.
I think people in general are scared of that responsibility, you know. And yeah. And I think when you think of it like that, it's like leadership. It's why I give leaders so much like grace,
yeah.
You know, whether you're a good or a bad one. But especially if you're a good one, because it's difficult to make decisions that affect everyone, even if those around think it's like an easy choice to make. Oh, no. this, that, you know, there's so many things to consider.
Yeah.
So I think we should give leaders some, cut them some slack. But at the same time, it's like, if you're going to be a leader though, you got to like...
Be accountable. Yep.
And you got to be, you know, ready to make those decisions without shying away from it. Take one for the team. You're there to take one for the team. Like, if your conscience is forever guilt-ridden because of that torture you did to that child, it's because you're a leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's on you to carry that burden. But I guess
not everyone has that. If that even took me to hell, but everyone else is good, then... these are hypotheticals, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't think I'll ever be in that position.
So, fingers crossed.
Well, it's not even possible.
You never, bro. You don't know what your next 20 years. The way, because think of it like this, right?
It's not possible
that you would have to touch your child.
That I'd be in a position where that hypothetical is not possible.
Okay, not that that explicitly so, but like a situation where you'd have to make a decision that affects a lot of people, and the answer is not as clear cut. Like there is no like easy answer, right? I think we're all gonna face that. I think that's judgment day for a lot.
Yeah, the only way that hypothetical would be possible is if like Satan literally like took over the world and made that a thing. But I don't.
I need Hollywood to do that. I need Hollywood to create a story that somehow ends up at that dilemma. Mm-hmm. Torture a child, maybe even kill the child, mm-hmm. and save humanity. I would like to see how a brilliant writer and director would like interpret and help us understand the
I feel like there's something I saw which it wasn't that situation, but it was, I can't remember. Gosh, I can't even remember. There's something I watched which had that type of moral dilemma. That was like the basis of it, but it's very fuzzy in my head now. So I can't like.
And I think it's also indicative of why like God is so complex. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea, you know, people say God is good. And I remember I said that I see God as like the highest good, mm-hmm. right? But even that word good is complicated because good doesn't always feel good in the moment.
Yes, time scale.
Yeah, good might be something that benefits a larger group of people or a even better good in the future.
Yes.
So for example, Jesus, the entire like religion of Christianity is built on the idea that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And I think in a sense, that is God answering the question, would you torture a child?
His own child.
To save his own child, to save humanity, right? And so that is poetic to me because if God is at work in all aspects of life, right? Then it means that we're all going to come to a point where we're going to have to make that kind of choice. Mm-hmm. It may not be at the same scale or the same stakes, but you're going to make a choice where you're going to have to like sacrifice something that is important to you, right? Like you have to go against, like think of it, everything you are, Zuby, right? You have such pride of your growth, of what you've achieved. You've made the most of yourself and you love who you are. And then something happens. It could be marriage. Mm-hmm. It could be having a child. Mm-hmm. Who knows what it is? Mm-hmm. But you have to come to a crossroads where you have to choose either that which you have so cherish over something else that doesn't immediately seem. Mm-hmm. It's like Abraham and Isaac. Mm-hmm. And the Bible is littered with stories like that where the thing you love the most, you cherish the most, it might not be taken from you, but you'll be tested, right? So at least with Abraham, he got rewarded for like taking on that challenge. And I think there's something in there for all of us to learn. Mm-hmm. But then with God, it was like he went all in. Mm-hmm. He took that L because, you know, there's something else at stake. Mm-hmm. So like, what does that churn in your brain?
I don't know, man. There's a lot I don't know.
It's a lot to think about, isn't it?
It's a lot to think about. You know? It's a lot to think about.
But that's why I like the Bible and I like religion, right? The Bible specifically because everything in it is an indication of something that you would likely experience or have to deal with at some point. And it's more or less like a blueprint. Mm-hmm. For example, you think of Jesus and his adventures, like before you even get carried away with the death and resurrection, the miracles, it's a story of a guy who had a responsibility that, you know, he wasn't necessarily like ready for or keen on at first.
No, he was born to die.
And then, imagine that you grow up and you keep having this, because I'm sure God is communicating the entire time, and he has this gnawing feeling that I'm going to die and I'm going to die for something.
You know, I'm going to die the worst death possible.
The worst death possible. Do I want to do that shit? Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He went to the fucking garden to like ask God to take this away from me.
What did he say? Oh my God, why hast thou forsaken me?
That's
a heavy statement.
Yeah.
That's a heavy statement.
And if you look at that story from a narrative perspective, as opposed to just throwing in all kinds of like that is something we can all relate to. You're all going to get to a point where you feel God has forsaken you, but then you got to like do what you got to do. You know, I fuck with that. I fuck with the fact that before he started his ministry, he had to go through the three temptations by the devil. Mm-hmm. And those temptations are everything that
a normal man would
succumb to. And it's a sense saying like, yo, first of all, turning stone to bread is like Are you going to be a basic ass nigga and be succumbing to like instant gratification? Mm-hmm. You're going to turn stone to bread.
This is after 40 days of 40 days of no food.
Right? Yeah. So like that test or the idea of, what was the other one?
Jumping from a high place for the angels to save him.
Yeah. We know God saves and God sustains, but do you have to like test? Mm-hmm. Do you have to be unwise because, you know, things like that? So mm-hmm. it's a very relatable like story. And the fact that he passed those tests.
It's actually funny because the third temptation, which is the biggest one, is not dissimilar to what you asked me.
Is there a dollar amount you can be paid for you to publicly preach the opposite of everything you stand for?
No.
Sure?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I knew that was a no. That was like a low ball for you anyway.
I think I said no, I think I said no before you'd answer.
But anyway, so...
And I've been tested on this one before. Not like to that level, but, you know, I've been offered a lot of money for things that, you know, I'm like, no. No. Even things that are much lower bar. Much lower bar. And I was like, no, you know, to promote certain things or to amplify it. And I was like, no, I won't do that. I don't want to share that with my audience. I don't like... Like, for example, I won't even promote alcohol on my podcast, right? Like, I could get a sponsorship from, you know, various companies where, like, I've been clear with people, like, no, I won't promote gambling. I won't promote alcohol. I won't promote like cigarettes, tobacco. Like, no, I don't care how much you can offer me. 100 grand for one podcast ad, I won't do it.
Yeah.
You know, or even things that are even less, like there was one, actually someone offered me $20,000 to promote like a cryptocurrency that was like related to like the adult porn industry. Sort of thing. I said no. It would have been easy. One tweet, 20 grand. I was like, no. I didn't even have to think about it. I was just like, no, I won't do that.
Yeah.
Like 20 grand, that's nice for a tweet. Yeah. But like, you know, it's like someone's whole salary, but no, like it's like, for me, it's very simple. And actually we didn't talk about this, but you know, we were talking about things being ethical. This is also why I think it's ethical to make yourself financially comfortable because it makes you desperation is dangerous. People do wrong, immoral, unethical things and criminal things when they're desperate. So the less privation you can have, the more comfortable and secure you can make yourself, not just financially, but like in everything, then the easier it is not to give in to certain temptations or things, because you're just like, no, like I don't, if I had $20 in my bank account and someone offered me 20 grand for a tweet, man, like that's, I think I'd still say no. But it would be harder. It would be more of a dilemma. So it would be like, man, like that's, I could do this with this. I could, you're more likely to compromise your integrity, right? And once you start compromising your integrity, it's easy to keep doing that over and over. How do you think like so many of these celebrities and actors and musicians, like they start here and they end up like, whoa, what's this guy doing? Like he started here and now he's like.
Something else.
Like look at Sam Smith.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, look at Lil Nas X.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Look at some of these. Like, there's people getting involved in, like, very weird, dark, demonic, weird, like, very rare, like, whoa, like, what are they even doing? You know, they started like this and family friendly. And then, like, a decade later, 2 years, you know, 15 years later, they're on and it's like, it's that ongoing compromise. You compromise this and then this one and then this one. And by the time you look up, you're like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing?
I always say that we need more celebrities with integrity.
Are we recording, by the way, or no?
Yes.
Oh, we are. Oh, I didn't even know. Oh, okay. Okay.
We need more celebrities with integrity, just because people who get a platform, who become famous, who get paid a lot of money, to not do stupid shit, just not do stupid shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like respect your audience, like try and be like meaningful in ways that go even beyond your craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the things you make should not be the best of you.
Yo, run that back. Run that back.
The things you make should not be the best of you.
If you're the least bit curious to hear more about this idea, I'd recommend an episode titled The King David Dynamic, A Guide to Being Irreplaceable. where I expand on my theory about super talented people and the demons that power their passion, and why they almost never suffer the consequences of their indiscretions. Dare I say, it's some of my best work this season. You can find a link in the description of this episode. All right, so where were we?
The things you make should not be the best of you. Mm. You don't have to be a role model. You don't have to lead. But
well, I'll jump in there.
Okay.
At that level, you don't choose whether or not you're a role model. You just are. So when you have celebrities or rappers or singers or pro athletes or whatever doing the I'm not a role model thing, you are, bro. You are. It doesn't. Maybe you didn't choose to be. Maybe you didn't like intentionally. That's not how you see yourself. But if you have millions of fans and you're influential, you're going to have some people, especially young people, who do see you as a role model.
Yeah.
It's not really a choice. It's like, you know, if you're it doesn't even just extend to celebrities. Like if you're an adult, especially if you're an adult of with any type of power or influence, you're some people will see you as a role model. Like I don't explicitly go out of I don't mind being a role model, let's say. But I don't like explicitly be like, okay, I am a role model. Just look at what I do and follow what I do. Like most people don't really choose that. But it's like, okay, look, you're in this position. People are listening to you. People are watching you. You have a certain level of charisma and influence and whatever. And, you know, your words have weight. And I know for a fact I can influence people in a positive direction because I've done it, you know, countless times. I see evidence of it every day. So if that's possible, surely also I could influence people in a negative direction if I went another way. Mm-hmm. And that does happen. You know, we're social beings. Some influence is obvious. Some of it is very sort of subtle and covert, and we're not fully aware of it. We have no idea how much of what we believe is because we were influenced to believe it by different things or by different people, and how much has really come from ourselves. We don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of it is definitely environmental. For sure. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that we'll never know the full balance of.
I think audiences also play a role in this as well. Because again, celebrities, you know how they say politicians don't like fall from the sky. They're part of the people. You know, same with celebrities. They come from us, from the majority, and then they somehow
bottom up.
Yeah, establish themselves. And at that point, it's like, we got to do better in terms of the kinds of people that we stan, right? You know, you can't like stan someone who has shown no other merit except for maybe their ability to do a thing, right? And then be surprised or upset when they fall short in like other ways, you know? Like it's, and then, because you stan them so hard, now you're emotionally distorted or affected by their misbehavior, right? And then you lose all, then you forget the role you played in this. You put them there, so to speak. You paid money to see them. You streamed their stuff. You didn't hold them accountable for when they were doing like the small stuff. You know, there's always that small ignorant tweet or that weird behavior that just kind of like, oh, that's a star, until they do the main thing. Like R. Kelly's thing, the signs were there forever.
Decades.
You know, it's just now we all got woke and everyone's now like has an opinion and it's like, but he's been in the game
since I was in school,
forever. And so it's easy to like throw him under the bus and be like, oh, R. Kelly's a monster, it's that. But he's the monster you made. With every song he made that was powered by, because I believe his is a very interesting case, because I think him doing those things was like fuel for his creativity. I don't think it's separate. Like he needed that as his feed to succeed, right? You gotta like touch a little girl here or pee on them to like get inspired or some shit. That was probably his thing, right? Like, and if you know that, you know, artists are fucking dysfunctional.
Yeah.
We go places to get inspiration, you know? So with R. Kelly, it was like, if someone had just nipped him in the bud early on, like, bro, you're talented, but we don't need your talent that much. If you have to like go that way, but because he was so marketable.
Yeah, well, this is the, you know, I'm a hardcore capitalist myself, but this is where, you know, capitalism and profit incentives can become a problem.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't have morals and ethics as a foundation to place certain boundaries on what you will and won't do and will and won't support for the almighty dollar or pound or euro or naira, then stuff can get very bad very quickly. And this can, and that's true of every single industry. What you were saying there before was interesting. I had 2 points on that. I think number one is the sort of religious perspective. I think this is why the Bible speaks so clearly about the dangers of idolatry, right? About having false idols and going beyond the point of admiring or being inspired or motivated by someone, but essentially worshiping, right? And we see a lot of celebrity worship in our culture, where that's people worshiping someone because they're good at football or basketball, worshiping them because they're just on TV a lot, worshiping them because they're in politics, worshiping them because they're good at making music. You know, these are not things that, you know, human beings are, we're naturally wired to praise something. So I think that when people don't have that solid foundation and even a belief in God, oftentimes, you know, get substituted by they don't stop worshiping, but they just start worshiping something else, right? There's people who worship money. There's people who worship all sorts of, there's people who worship sex and pleasure. There's people who worship, just
the thrill,
drugs and hedonism and hedonism. there's all sorts. And then the other thought I had on that is, you know, more than ever now, but always true to some degree, which is that we live in an attention economy. So energy is attention. And attention is energy even. Attention is energy, and energy is money, and money is energy. People don't think of money as energy, but that's what it is, right? Whatever you feed, it grows. So whatever you're paying attention to and you're watching and you're streaming and you're listening to and you're reacting to, that thing grows. I mean, even the algorithms that are programmed on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, they're based on attention. They're based on, oh, okay, people are paying attention to this and reacting and respond. Okay, let's show it to even more people and let's run more ads on it and let's, you know, market it more. So now more than ever, I think people need to be on guard, especially when they're online, of, you know, what they give attention to and how much. Because even if your attention is negative, even if it's outrage, that registers just the same as love does. Leaving a dislike on the on a video registers just like leaving a like. Hate watching something registers, you know, that's whether you watch or listen to something out of spite or you watch or listen to it because you like it, that's still a stream. That's still a view. So I'm big on, and let me say this especially for people who are, I don't know how relevant this is to an audience in Nigeria, but certainly in the West, people who are more sort of right-leaning or conservative, or just sane, even if, you know, people need to, I think people need to, you know, man, two things. I'm jumping. My brain jumps around a lot. Number one, I think it's better to define yourself by what you're for rather than what you're opposed to. Define yourself and base your things around what you support, not what you oppose, and give more energy to the things you support than the things that you suppose, than the things you oppose, right? If you claim that you have a problem with degenerate rap music and you have a problem with, you know, some of the filth that you see on TV and you have a problem with this politician and their messaging and whatever, if I look on your social media feed and 90% of it is dedicated to those ideas, but you're never actually supporting the people that you claim to support, or you're not amplifying the things that you actually like, right? If you're just sitting there complaining about all the bad music that exists and how degenerate it is and how, you know, this and this and this, but you're never promoting the artists who you think are actually making good, positive, wholesome, inspirational music, then okay, like you might think that you're a crusader, but you're also feeding the problem. Like I said, because we live in an attention economy. So if you want something to grow, give it attention. If you're just continually feeding and promoting and amplifying the stuff that you have a problem with, all that happens is more and more people are seeing it, more and more people are hearing it. And the people, the artists and the creatives and the people who are out there actually genuinely trying to put out stuff that's positive and wholesome and uplifting and isn't just filthy, then they're not getting the shine because you're still putting the spotlight on all the nonsense. And I wish more people would understand that.
Exactly. I always say that I want to be defined by the things I love, not the things I hate.
Yeah.
That has made all the difference. If something irks me online or wherever, you know, obviously I would address it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
And then that'd be it.
Yeah.
I would not go back to it or harp on it or keep like looking for more things that feed that. I will say what I need to say one time and then let it be that.
Yeah.
And then go ham on the things because I love you. I love, and I think that's part of like, and you can relate to this. That's part of like where your sense of calm comes from, because you could look around you at any given moment, and you know, oh shit, that's something I love that I have kept close, something that brings me joy that I've kept around. You know the things like you think of your mother and your father. Think of it like this, bro. A lot of people suffer, right, because they don't even have the kind of feelings you have for your mom and dad. Imagine if most people were like, man, I love how my parents raised me. Man, my dad is such a like stand-up guy. My mom is such a stand-up woman. Just that alone is enough to set you up mentally forever.
Yeah.
Before you even add the other things that, you know, you could find on your own. So, which is also now, you know, because you tweeted sometime that was very, very poignant to me. This is a tweet that you made. The best activism is raising good children.
You said that one really resonated, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was from almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
I remember it, yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you said that, I was like, that is so spot on. And it now brings to mind, you know, all the ways that my parents, you know, obviously parents are flawed in so many ways.
Of course.
But then when you like grow up and then you start to like learn, I'm like, damn, you know, I had it good. And not like, oh, his mom or dad beat him 5 times and mine only beat me 2 times. No. I mean, the lessons, the example.
And now, a quick message from our sponsor, Able Creative. Able Creative is an Abuja-based creative agency that builds brands and people. It is owned by yours truly. We have a very particular set of skills. Skills acquired over a very long career. Skills that make us a blessing for entrepreneurs, brands, and businesses. If you need creativity coaching, consultation, communication, and creative direction, we are looking for you. And we will find you. And we will be the creative right hand you need to be brilliant. You can learn more about what we do, what we've done, and who we've done it for via our website. There's a link in the description of this episode. Or you can contact me directly for a free consultation.
Back to celebrity worship. It is not possible to worship celebrity when your self-esteem puts you in a place where it's like, I could be that. You know? But people, a lot of people don't have that. Again, back to that like gaping hole where your personality is supposed to be. So you fill it with all these other people. And not in a good way where it's like, oh, I like how Steph Curry is very, very like dedicated to his work. I'm going to take that. I like how Michael Jackson is so like wholesome in his normal day, but he's aggressive in his work. Like when he's on stage, he's a different animal. I want to take that. Now it's like, you want to like just take the personality, the aura and put it in, no.
And thing is, you know, people also have to remember that you're only seeing a little snapshot of someone's life. Right, you're seeing a highlight reel, especially when it comes to these celebrities. So you can see someone out there; they could be an actor, a singer, a rapper, an athlete, whatever, you know. And their life, what you see of their life, might look amazing. You might see that and think, "Hey, I want that. I want that money. I want that fame. I want that." Be very careful what you even wish for, because a lot of these people, in various ways, are sad, dysfunctional. They have their problems with their families, with their friendships, with their marriages, with their children, whatever. And in order to even reach the heights of certain fields, it kind of helps to be a little bit messed up in some ways, as you've already acknowledged. So just because someone has, especially like, you know, money and fame, you know, don't assume that their life is better than yours, because in many cases it's not. And you see this, right? People, whenever like some big celebrity commits suicide, right? It doesn't matter. It could be Robin Williams. It could be, remember Avicii, the DJ. It could be, you know, happens a lot, right?
Chef.
Yes, Anthony Bourdain.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Whoever it is. These are just three examples, but you can find hundreds, probably thousands. You know, these are people who had incredible wealth, incredible fame, so much going for them. Like, for to an outsider, it looks like, you know, yeah. What about the guy from Linkin Park?
Yes, Chester.
Chester, right? Yeah. Even had a wife, kids, everything. There's so many examples. But you don't know what is going on in that person's mind. You don't know where their spirit's at. You don't know all this stuff. It can look good on the surface. This isn't just true of celebrities. It's true of everyone. And this is also a good reason why you should just treat people kindly in general. Because you just don't know. You don't know what people are going through. Mm. You don't know what... You just don't know.
Yeah.
So it's best to... You know, it's good to treat people kindly just for the sake of treating people kindly. But I think it's also good to just recognize that, okay, that person, you might think, especially in this online social media world, because here's something that happens. And, this has happened to me many times. That probably happens every day to some degree. But if someone is like prominent or has a lot of followers or viewers or is famous or could be considered a celebrity or whatever, oftentimes from multiple levels, people stop treating them like a human being.
Yeah.
And I think this is one thing that can drive a lot of celebrities kind of crazy, which is that people stop treating them like humans for such a long time. You have the sycophants, you have the people who are worshiping them and idolizing them and treating them like they are literally gods, and, you know, crying when they see them and faint, you know, just weird, very strange, bizarre behavior. But then you also have the people who think that they'll just attack and insult and threaten and harass and intimidate and whatever. And it's okay. Oh, well, they've got money, they've got fame, so they can take it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This celebrity can be my personal punching bag.
Yeah.
Because they're a celebrity. And it's like, bro, that's another human being. That's another human being. And so, yeah, you know, you can. I'm not here trying to say, oh, you know, never make jokes about things, or, you know, you can't like troll or make memes or whatever, like, you know, have at it. But there's levels where it's like, you know, if you're just dehumanizing someone and you think that's okay because, oh, well, they have a lot of followers or they have a lot of money, so, you know, they shouldn't complain about it. It's like, bro, just be a decent human being, man. Anyone listening, being a genuinely kind human being, don't buy into this crap that you have to be like mean to be successful, or you have to be a jerk to do well in life. It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense, and it's a psychopathic way of thinking. It's the opposite. If you are genuinely kind and you are polite to people and you treat people decently, whoever they are, people who can help you, people who can't help you, people who are socially above you, status-wise, people who are below, whatever. Just if you treat everybody kindly and decently, and like it will... It's good for them, and also it's good for you long term, because everybody has a reputation. Everyone has a reputation. You don't want to become the person who's, you know, their reputation is, oh, this person is mean and nasty and cruel,
yeah,
and whatever. Maybe in the very short term, that might seem like a short term beneficial, right? Step on some toes, you know, run some quick scams, lie to some people, do all this lie, cheat, steal. In the short term, you can kind of get away with that for a short amount of time and get some quick material wins. But in the long term, it's always going to come back to you. It's always going to come back to you. And people don't like to work with people that they don't like. People don't want to hang out with people they don't like. People don't want to, you know, whatever it is. So I know for myself, whatever country I'm in, whatever city I'm in, like, I've managed to, and I'm grateful to have built a lot of goodwill. I don't think, you know, you would invite me to this podcast if it was like, oh, wow, that guy's nasty, that guy's cruel, that guy's just mean. Like, no, people want to talk to and be with people who are genuinely kind. So
I'll take your thoughts a step further.
Sure.
Karma.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There are people who would say karma doesn't exist because, you know, there's a lot of evidence of seemingly bad people succeeding or seemingly succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to them that thing about karma is that it is not always obvious.
Yes.
Right? Just because, same way, you don't know what's going on in people's lives or in their heads. So if you're going to be mean to people, right, and be successful doing that, like, or rather, like, build an empire, a legacy doing that, oh, yeah, you could definitely do that. But here's the thing. Sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
It means that if you're mean, you got to stay mean.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to stay mean, you're going to have to like deal with the consequences of staying mean, which is no peace of mind. Mm-hmm. You can't trust anyone.
Mm-hmm. Creating enemies.
Mm-hmm. And so you always have to be on the defense mm-hmm. against those enemies, right? Like, and so that's karma in a sense, because you think it's not an enjoyable life to live that way, but it certainly gives you the short-term gratification. But long-term, you're living a life where, and it ripples, like you said, because your family, you think if you're treating people like that, it's going to be different in your family. Mm-hmm. Oh no, you're going to marry someone who's going to resent you. Mm-hmm. You're going to have kids who, because I remember growing up, my dad is like this guy where during our trips around the world, in every airport we go to, my dad used to get so much goodwill. We used to get like so much like stuff mm-hmm. because of him.
Yeah.
Right? The access was crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're telling me that doesn't pay to be good? You're paying it for, it's generational wealth in a sense. Yes. Right? The things that you do for you to people, your kids, people who know you, who are gonna like either benefit or suffer as a result of that, mm-hmm. right? You can't imagine what it's like to be Donald Trump's kids right now. That's the worst surname in America. if you're you know trying to do something, Trump, are you related to the Trump, right? Baron Trump, my God, that kid, he endured so much shit just because his dad is, you know, who he is, mm-hmm. and now going forward, he has to grow up in that shadow, which means that he either has to distinguish himself as like the opposite in a very real way, or just suffer the consequences of his dad's, you know, public, you know, persona. So yeah, like being mean, being an asshole, being someone who is just not likable. Like you said one time, it pays to be likable. People always say,
"Oh gosh, oh, it does massively."
I'm not trying to be likable. Yeah, man, you better be trying to be likable.
Yeah,
like
it's also just easier. It's more. It's. I don't even. Some people say that it's like it's easier to be mean. I don't even look. Maybe I'm just wired differently to some people, but I think that like being rude and impolite and that like it's more to me that it also takes more effort. Like it's not hard to be polite. Like it's more pleasant. You have your day to day life is better. You're happier with yourself. Like life is just more pleasant.
Yeah,
it's more pleasant. And of course, human beings are reciprocal. And people have long memories. And if you go around and you just step on everyone's toes and you're mean to that person and rude to that, then, you know, it comes back to you. And then on a bigger level, I would also say, man, God is watching. Even if you think that no one is watching, I believe, you know, people have their different beliefs. I believe that God is watching. He's seeing what you're doing. He's seeing how you're treating other people. What's done in the shadows, you know, will come to the light. And ultimately, you know, I don't think you can get away with evil. And this is where my perspective would differ from someone who perhaps is totally atheistic. You know, I don't think you can get away with evil, right? So these people who do commit atrocities and then, you know, they never say they never face trial. Maybe they commit suicide or whatever. Like, I don't think that's the end of the road for them, right? I don't think that, I don't think Hitler and Gandhi are in the same place. Right, like you know what I mean. I don't think you can just go and mass murder millions of people and then take yourself out and like, oh, okay, you know, it's over for you. I'm like, no, I do think that there's a greater justice than that. So maybe in this short life, which lasts a matter of decades, usually century tops. Sure, you can get away with a lot of bad stuff, you know, up until the point of even murdering other human beings. Maybe you can get away with that in this lifetime, but I don't think on an eternal level you get away with that stuff.
Yeah, that's where reincarnation really gets interesting for me.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know if I don't know if I'm ready to subscribe to heaven and hell after death, although I do subscribe to heaven and hell on earth in terms of your mental state and things happening around you, right? But with regards to what happens after you die, I think Hitler, if reincarnation is to be believed,
he's a bed bug.
He came back as something. You know, I don't think, you know, he's having a good time right now, wherever he is, you know, or someone like Da Vinci, for example. Da Vinci is someone who, we talked about gifts and utilizing them. He's someone that if there's anybody who's the example of utilizing your gifts and like maximizing your human potential, he's that dude, right? You can imagine his reincarnation. He's coming back as some, he ain't gonna do shit. He can just be like a prince in a castle somewhere in Europe just enjoying grapes and shit. And I did all my work. He'll be wise as hell, like as a kid, you know, because he has that old soul that reincarnation like gives, right? But I've done my time, you know, living my life. Now I'm gonna be here. I'm gonna just be wise as hell. I'm gonna eat some grapes. My mother tells me to do some shit, I'll like be wise as hell. You know, maybe go be a child prodigy somewhere just for fun of it, but not really care because I've done my time, right? So in that sense, I feel like that's what's worth living in the moment and doing well for. Because if you believe in reincarnation, you want to come back as something easier, something that you want to earn your keep.
Yeah, man. Look, we don't know what happens after we die. I'm a Christian. I believe in heaven and hell. But, you know, ultimately, from a purely rational perspective, you know, we do not know. I guess we'll all see that one day. We'll find out who's right and wrong, or maybe everyone's wrong, or, you know, maybe it's some combination, but, you know, we will see. But yeah, no, I totally agree with your idea of, you know, we all have our own personal heaven and hell on this earth, and with our own in our own hearts and our own minds. And it's absolutely the case that people can experience some degree of something leaning towards heaven or paradise within their lifetime. And you can also make certain choices and do certain things which put you in your own little personal, you know, little personal hell. But yeah, man, you know, these conversations are important. I hope that people can take a lot of positivity from it and think. I often say that I don't want to tell people what to think, but I want to tell people to think. And I think, you know, with a lot of the stuff we've discussed, it's planted a lot of seeds and it'll plant a lot of seeds in listeners' heads and things to think about. And I think if you can just nudge people in a more positive, a more thoughtful, a higher consciousness direction, then that's a great service.
Man.
But yeah, this is a long one, man. Let's get some lunch.
Yeah. Yes, you should. Because you said you had me marinating a little bit on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Zubi, so this is like, what, part two now? So thanks again for doing this with me, bro.
You're welcome, brother.
You know the worth of what you do. As they say, by your fruits you shall know them. You're doing the damn thing. Thank you for coming out here. You know, the entire time I was thinking, you know, I'm pretty sure he doesn't know Abuja that well, you know, so he might be wary about, you know, his movement, but you took the chance and we're here. We did a great thing and now we're about to have some very, very good lunch.
No doubt, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me, man.
It's always a great conversation. It will not be the last time.
No doubt.
I should come on your podcast next time.
Sure.
All right.
And that is a wrap. And before I leave you guys, let me just say that Zubi is one of my favorite guests ever for a lot of reasons, but mainly this. This man gave me the rare opportunity to express some very complex, nuanced, and unpopular opinions, things I've kept in my head, things I haven't even brought to the podcast in monologue form before. And through this conversation, I've been able to sort of reflect, unpack, and really test my ideas with someone who is the most rational, most intelligent person when it comes to these kind of things. Not a lot of guests have the range, nor the imagination, nor the interest about such things. And so I'd ordinarily have to keep these things surface level. But with Zubi, I was like a kid in an intellectual candy store, fam. And I thank him for allowing me to think through some of these ideas in real time. Thank you for joining me. And thank you guys for tuning in for over 2 hours of conversation. I hope it was worth your time. I hope you took a lot from it. We did our best to really curate the best version of ourselves for you guys. And if you want to learn more, if you want to know more, please follow the podcast on Instagram at The Young God Pod and Twitter at I Am The Young God. Do subscribe leave a review. I want to hear from you guys what you think. What are your thoughts on everything that's been said? And, you know, just take your time and go listen to other episodes of the podcast. This is legitimately one of the best podcasts in the world, dare I say. Google me. But more than anything, just scroll through the episode lists. See whatever titles pique your interest. There's something for everyone, for every season. It's timeless. It's just legit. And with all of that said, I'm your host, the one and only Rodney Amorkache. And this is The Young God.
This got talk. This got talk. Let God talk.
It brings some excitement to the word of God.